So I wish the decision had waited just a few minutes so I could have given you all of my bold predictions and guesses as to who was going to write the majority opinion. But, of course, the court didn't wait. I'm going to talk a little bit about just the Supreme Court process, some practice tips in case any of you all find yourselves in the line of sight for a possible Supreme Court case. And lessons learned that we learned sometimes the hard way throughout this process. I will say that I am not an expert in land use regulations, so if it seems like I'm focusing more on Supreme Court practice, I'm not an expert on that either, but this is the first time I've been at this conference, and it's been a real learning opportunity. So what I want to start with is it's amazing that we got here for a couple of different reasons. When this case came into our office, it was filed in state court. And that probably made a lot of sense, actually, for both sides, for the state court to be a venue. But, of course, Reagan National challenged our permitting decisions under federal law principles under the First Amendment. Whenever that happens, we reflexively think, we want to be in federal court, and in this case, we wanted to be in federal court not just because they were addressing issues of First Amendment principles, but also because federal court somewhat neutralizes who the parties are when they enter the courtroom. There is no sort of hometown, or certainly not as much when you go into federal court. So that's one thing just to be aware of, that this Supreme Court path would not have started for us had we not removed the case to federal court. And then just statistically, it is hugely improbable that the case would have made its way to the Supreme Court. All the analytical folks who look at this determine that approximately of all the petitions filed each year, 1% of cert petitions are granted. And the denominator, in terms of the number of petitions that have been filed, is increasing, which only makes that statistical odd go down. The court hears about 70 cases per term. So statistically speaking, we were unlikely to get there, which means we would have been stuck from the city's perspective with, if you read it, you're out of luck from a First Amendment standpoint decision. A petition grant, just so everybody is aware, requires four justices, and I'll talk a little bit about the reasoning behind when the court takes cert, just briefly, but they very rarely grant cert for pure error-correcting reasons. So if there's a factual error or kind of a rule of law error that the appellate courts issue, that's not typically a basis for four justices to take cert. So when do they look at it? Rule 10 of the appellate rules applies and generally requires a compelling reason, and that it also builds into it conflicts amongst the circuit courts as reasoning for possibly taking cert. But if you read the rule, you have no clear indication of why particular justices may be inclined to want to hear a case. There's no rationale for how they exercise that discretion, even if a case involves compelling circumstances. So, again, conventional wisdom based on the Supreme Court gurus, I'm not one of them, but kind of the cases of, or the buckets of cases that the court tends to take up are cases that involve high-profile issues of the day. If you look at the current makeup of the court, some of those cases could include abortion, diversity issues. We have kind of, we're standing in the UT building, so we have a subsequent case to Fisher making its way through the courts, religious discrimination, et cetera. There's also a tendency for the courts, even if it's not high profile, to want to wade into important questions of federal law. And the makeup of this particular court, if you listen to a lot of the prognosticators for the Supreme Court, this particular court is bent towards, setting aside ideology, an anti-regulatory or deregulatory bent. And so what you'll see is some cases being granted cert where perhaps we are not practitioners in this area of law at the federal level, but again, they're an anti-regulatory court as a whole. Again, I would just point out that it's very surprising, given that bent, that the city of Austin prevailed in this case. And then the last two possibilities are circuit splits and then error correcting function. Just some practice pointers that we've learned during this process. When you get to the point where you're going to be filing a writ of cert, it's almost mandatory, and I think our opposing counsel, Russ Horton, would agree with us on this. When you get to the Supreme Court level, you don't just need an appellate practitioner. You need somebody who is within the beltway appellate practitioner. We started out with an appellate lawyer who I very much respect and who actually sat in on the oral argument in the case. But he was counseling us that that's not enough. If you're going to get a cert petition granted, you need a name that's probably one of three or four people on that brief. So we actually lined up Michael Dreeben, not at the initial petition stage, but at our reply stage. And so